Prime Time replay from Money FM 89.3.
Today we're talking about the career that all Asian parents had wanted us to go into, but sadly were disappointed. But according to a 2016 report released by Deloitte on the legal industry predicting profound reforms over the next decade, automation, the rise of millennials in the workplace, and changing client demands will shift the needs of the industry. The report also projected a 39% loss of legal sector jobs, offset by new positions in data analytics, legal technology, architecting and design, risk mitigation, and other yet-to-be-identified fields.
Mm-hmm. And in November, Singapore's Ministry of Law also sought public feedback on moves to implement the recommendations of a committee tasked with conducting a thorough review of the professional training regime for law graduates. Well, we speak to Anita Prakash, Director, Legal Education Cluster at Singapore Academy of Law, on the transition of law from lawyer-centric to customer-focused global digitized industry. Welcome to the show, Anita. What are some of the current innovation trends in the industry?
Thanks, guys. Well, that sums up pretty much everything. So I'm going to try and unpack that a little. I think innovation, candidly, has become a bit of a buzzword. So when we talk about innovation, I think it's useful to kind of pare it down in practical terms. You have people, you have process, and you have tools. And a lot of innovation right now is synonymous with technology being translated into some kind of tool. So on that front, what we are seeing is technology trends in machine learning impacting document review and legal research. The blockchain is giving rise to smart contracts. And on the data front, analytics, predictive analytics in particular, helping to aid decision-making in certain areas of the law. And you've got a lot of buzz around those things. But I think people sometimes forget the people innovation and the process innovation. And so the stuff going on in education, you mentioned the CPTL, for example. That's an attempt at some form of people innovation. And in, you know, since I'm in the education field, that's exactly what floats my boat.
Yeah. Do you think, though, there's lacking that sort of impetus to move the education sector a little more quickly, as quickly as the process parts of the job, as the other aspects of the job?
Yeah, I think that there is a degree of catch-up. And that's because, to a degree, the changes that we're seeing now are reactive to things, to, you know, what the clients are demanding, right? So if you look at legal services, a lot of how we do things is driven by either our traditional paradigm of what our value is, or the client's articulation of what value is. And increasingly, we're finding the client becoming a very strong advocate of what value as they see it is. So in response, education needs to prepare individuals to deliver legal services in the way that clients expect, rather than in a traditional paradigm of what legal expertise is. And I think the really exciting stuff for now, at least, is happening in continuing education, because that's at the coalface, right? You're not dealing so much with students in higher education. You're dealing with people in practice having to face those clients and justify their billable hours. And so in continuing education, the Academy of Law has the Legal Industry Framework for Training and Education. It abbreviates to LIFTED, because the idea is to lift the profession to new standards of professional competence.
Oh, clever.
Thank you. And really, the focus there is all of those things. So how can project management skills, it's a norm in some industries, but how can those skills be brought to bear on delivery of legal services? How can, you know, kind of analytics or kind of data science inform delivery of legal services? And how can even better teamwork in multidisciplinary teams improve legal services delivery, right? All these are skill sets. They don't teach them in traditional curriculum. And now there's an opportunity, basically, to skill our folks in these areas.
I'm hard-pressed to see how tech might help in those areas. Might it?
Well, I think, so in terms of being a means to an end, analytics, I think, is one area where certainly technology is the means by which you can make sense of large amounts of
information. Is power.
Right, so imagine if you're a lawyer in practice and you have your own dashboard, right, that can show you basically how much time you're spending on different cases, whether you're working optimally or giving you different client profiles. I think it suddenly allows you to make much more sense mm-hmm. around what you're doing, rather than rely on gut or rely on a very small sample of information to make your to deliver your services.
Mm-hmm. So if we go forward, I mean, do you have any predictions on future trends mm-hmm. or even what you personally hope to see?
Well, I think I get a bit
misty-eyed. No.
Well, I resist the predictions thing because okay. it's just, you know, it's more like an adventure, right?
Okay.
Like,
okay.
So the idea is, well, I think the being hopeful about things probably more my speed.
Okay.
And so I'm hopeful.
What do you think
is
lacking? What you want to see mm-hmm, mm-hmm. that should be sped up? You feel?
Well, I think I'm looking at the younger lawyers coming through. I'm hopeful that, one, they have a far more adventurous outlook on life. I think they have been brought up in an age with far fewer certainties, and that basically has equipped them with a kind of agility to say, okay, you know, let me try this out. And if I fail, there's a certain bounceability, and they have a go at something else.
Mm.
And I think in this transitional period for the law, that's a very, very important virtue almost, you know, because if you don't try, you're not going to change anything new. And as the traditional ways of doing and thinking are increasingly challenged, you kind of need people with the courage to go out on a limb and do a bit different.
Mm-hmm.
And then from those, you know, case studies almost, everyone else can move a step forward.
Talk to us a bit more about, earlier you talked about how the education aspect mm-hmm. of things always seems to be playing a bit of catch up.
Right.
So at this stage, though, I mean, people still have to work. The law continues, so to speak, mm-hmm. right? So how can law firms then keep up in that regard? You've
right.
got your discerning clients, mm-hmm. you said, in your face with, I want it done this way, mm-hmm. maybe, or why can't you offer it to me quicker,
yeah.
for example?
Well, I think the culture of law firms is really important. So supporting their people in improving themselves. I think when you tell someone, no, you know what, you're a insolvency lawyer, so relevant learning is an update on the Insolvency Act, and that's all we're going to kind of send you for.
That sounds fair, though, right?
Right?
Makes sense.
If you look at it head on, it does, right? Because
yeah.
that's fairly transactional. This is your area of work. This will inform directly your area of work. Therefore, it is relevant. But if we think about value-addedness as more than just expertise, then telling someone, well, you know, you're a really good technical lawyer, potentially you could be a great law leader, maybe some leadership training, you know, maybe some cultural awareness training, maybe some presentation skills training,
mm-hmm.
All these things.
Presentation skills?
Yeah.
One would assume you guys are the kings
trained.
At that. Yeah.
I think
are the communication experts.
From this experience, I realize advocacy training does not prepare you to do a radio interview.
We'll dial it back, Anita. We'll dial it back then.
So I think this can go into the competency framework,
okay.
You know. But I think that there's such a broad range of skill sets. So in Lifted, for example, we actually articulate it as kind of your self-management skills, because dealing with the stress and all of that is hugely important. You have, of course, your professional ethics and stuff, your technical skills, but also your technology skills and your interpersonal awareness. And then all the sideways skills. So if you're in crim law, for example, mm-hmm. understanding forensics. If you're in family law, understanding family psychology. And I think once you broaden your perspective, the opportunities to solve complex problems through higher level synthesis becomes possible.
Mm.
And really, when you're looking at how technology is automating kind of your more routine tasks, mm-hmm. that's where the value of the profession is going to be. Being able to solve complex problems for which there are no clear rights and wrongs with an algorithm can
mm-hmm.
help with.
Mm-hmm. Well, Anita, last month, Senior Minister of State for Law, Edwin mm-hmm. Tong, said that students considering a law career should weigh the tough yep. competition against the lure of prospects.
Mm-hmm.
So what does this mean for prospects in the industry?
Right.
So I got to say, Bernard and I left school, decades ago, and it's still, I want to go into law,
yeah.
right? Our younger cousins,
yeah,
our
exactly.
kids maybe.
Yeah.
I blame TV.
Oh, dear.
But quite aside from that, I think, so, Senior Minister of State Edwin Tong mentioned that at the Junior College Law Program, And that's a program that the Singapore Academy of Law runs and has been running for 11 years. And that's because in my time, it was Matlock, right? Mm-hmm. Today, it's suits. Mm-hmm. But the idea is, kids, if you are contemplating a career in the law, come in with your eyes wide open. This is not all roses. And actually, when you choose a profession, in, you know, you choose a career in the law, it's not just a career as it is now, but as it might be in the future, warts and all. Mm-hmm. And I think that simply was the message, you know, saying, well, here's a good idea of what things look like. We are in a time of great change. And so if you're coming into the law, make sure you're doing it for reasons other than the trimmings, you know. And I think fundamentally it is about the idea of justice and service and being a handmaid to that.
Mm. Talk to us about whether or not the training will obviously raise competency, mm-hmm. but address the shortage of training contracts, though?
So that's an interesting question. And actually what the recommendations do is it admits diversity into our definition of what the profession is. So back when I graduated, there were basically two paths in law, right? You either practiced in a law firm, or you went in-house, or actually the third option was you become a legal academic. And that was the definition of the legal profession. The changes basically recognize that someone can go to law school and carve out for themselves a career in the law that isn't active lawyering in that sense.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So if I am in a law...
Where does the bar come into all of this?
So
they are called to the bar, but they may not need to...
That's right. Okay. So the distinction now is not so much being admitted to the bar, but whether or not an individual holds a practicing certificate. So
okay.
Only the folks in law firms hold practicing certificates and then can appear in court as advocates. In-house counsel, legal technologists, academics, people like me don't hold a practicing cert, but we continue to contribute in value-added ways to the broader legal services ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when dealing with change and wanting to promote innovation, that diversity is hugely important because no change ever came from groupthink and navel-gazing.
Mm-hmm. So very quickly now, what are some of the other challenges facing Singapore's positioning as a legal hub? Mm-hmm. I mean, to kind of grow the legal sector and obviously the generate more jobs for Singaporeans.
Right. So in terms of the challenge here, it's, I mean, as I see it, I think it's hugely intertwined with the opportunities. So Singapore law enjoys a reputation as being certain and clear and efficient. And compared to other developed common law jurisdictions, pretty cost effective as well. The challenge, though, is that if you're an SME, right, and all your templates use a certain other jurisdictions' laws, that first step to adopting Singapore law is going to be quite challenging because you effectively have to redo everything.
Mm.
And so what we can do to help and what the Academy is doing is creating standard form templates. We have the basically VIMA initiative, right? And this is for venture capital agreements for startups that use Singapore law. There are a set of standard forms. Startups and businesses can use them very, very easily. And it's a way to begin to use Singapore law. And why this is important is because when Singapore law is used, then expertise in Singapore law becomes essential. And then that creates opportunities down the line.
And of course, with technology, it's become so global now, the world, right?
That's
Everything's
right.
interconnected, and the market here is finite, so going in and out is obviously a needed thing. Mm-hmm. So Anita Prakash, I wish we had more time, Director, Education Cluster at the Singapore Academy of Law. Thank you for coming today.
Thank you so much for having me, guys.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg. or download the SPH Radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.